Hello. So before I begin this podcast, I'd like to reemphasize the fact that PhysioMentalist is here to help you. As a physiotherapist student and as a young physiotherapist, feel free to reach out to us. When we say failure, what does it mean? Obviously, it means something or someone has failed. So when we say respiratory failure, it's the failure of respiration. It means that the staff or the group of staffs that are in charge of respiration have failed to perform their duty. So that is basically what respiration failure is. So what is respiration? Two things under respiration: ventilation and gas exchange. So that means that if we say respiration failure, we are saying ventilation and or gas exchange failure. That means the failure of the components that are in charge of respiration to ventilate and to exchange gas, or to exchange gas, because both might happen together. Both might happen individually. So you might have loss of ventilation or loss of gas exchange or both together. So basically, that's what respiration failure is. So to best explain this, we'll have to start with the components of the respiration system, the ones that are failing. So the mnemonics I usually use is CPRULO, CIPRULO, CPRULO. The C is the central nervous system. That's the first component of the respiratory system. You also talk about the respiratory areas in the pulmons. They are the ones controlling. That's one of the major part of the component of the respiratory system. And also you have the peripheral nervous system. You have to talk about the phrenic nerve, the intercostal nerve, all of those. Supply the muscles C3, C4, C5, the peripheral nervous system. So that's CP. Now R, the R is the respiratory muscle and the rib cage. The respiratory muscles and the rib cage, they're also part of the component of respiratory system. Now U, the U is for upper and lower airway. Upper and lower airway, that's the respiratory tract lined by pseudostratified epithelial cells, cilia, with a lot of BCG, mucinous mucous gland, blah blah blah. Yeah, and L is lung parenchyma. That is where you talk about alveoli and all of those. And then last but not the C, last but not the least is the O, which I usually use for others, and these others include the cardiovascular system and hemoglobin, So these CPRULOs are the component of the respiratory system. If any of them fails, there'll be failure. If any of them fails, there'll be some level of failure. Why? Because we won't have the respiration won't be full. And like I said, respiration is both ventilation and gas exchange. Now let me explain what ventilation is. Ventilation is the movement of air into the lungs and out of the lung. That's ventilation. It's the movement of air. That was what we usually call breathing in and out. While gas exchange is what happens when the air we've taken in gets to the alveoli and crosses over into the blood. That's gas exchange, and that is when carbon dioxide from the blood crosses over to the alveoli to be removed, to be expired out of the body. So oxygen crosses over to the blood, carbon dioxide crosses back to the lungs. So now we have ventilation, then gas exchange, then ventilation. That makes the cycle. That makes the respiratory cycle. So if at any point any of this process fails, then you have respiratory failure. So there are two, these components that I listed earlier, the sucralose, are divided into two. The ones that are controlling the ventilation part and the ones that controls the gas exchange. So the CPR, the first part, the C, the first three are the ventilatory pump. They maintain how much control we have over the air we breathe in and the air we breathe out. Normally, during inspiration, you have muscles working. Muscles like the external intercostal muscle, with help from, if you need it anyways, but most times we usually don't need the accessory muscles. Help from muscles like pectoralis minor, scalene muscle. All the muscles are basically attached to the rib, to the upper part of the rib, to elevate the rib. Any muscle that elevate the rib would assist in inspiration. So that is what we use. We contract these muscles to inspire, to take air in. Usually when we want to let the air out, it is elastic recoil that we use, not even muscles, to let the air out. So these muscles are elastic, yeah? Muscles have elasticity properties. So when they contract, when they let air in, it's like pulling a rubber. They are ready to go back to their relaxed state by the law of elasticity. Also, the lungs, parenchyma itself is elastic. It has a lot of elastin in the lining, the respiratory tract, the lower and upper airway. More in the lower airway anyways. So once air enters, distend all of them, they want to go back to their former size. So that elastic recoil moves air out of the lungs. So when we need help in removing, if there's a lot of carbon dioxide to remove from the lungs, then we want to recruit more muscles to help with this elastic recoil. That's when we need all the muscles that pulls the rib down. Muscles like internal, intercostal muscle, and the abdominal muscles. So that is the accessory muscles that we need to aspire. So the CNS, the pons, respiratory center, the PNS, the phrenic nerve, the respiratory muscle, and the ribcage, the three of them, the CPR, control this ventilatory pump, such that when there's a problem with them, it affects how much air we take in and how much air we breathe out. So it affects our minutes and alveolar ventilation. Yeah. And what does that lead to? It leads to what we call carbon dioxide retention. Carbon dioxide retention. Why? Because when these muscles are not working, don't forget that the recoil is important to remove carbon dioxide out of the body. So the little contraction that would get from any of these components, I mean, the three of them don't fail at the same time. So the little contraction that we get from them is enough to take in some air needed for gas exchange, but it's not enough to cause an elastic, like enough elastic recoil that will take the CO2 that's present in the lung out of the lung. And the rate of diffusion of CO2 out of the blood is high because it mixes easily well with water from carbonic acid. That's by the way, but that not having that much force for elastic recoil leads to the retention of carbon dioxide and results into hypercapnia. And over time, that would also compromise gas exchange. Why? Because at some point, there won't be enough gas to exchange with. So usually that hypercapnia always usually go with hypoxia, but it usually start with hypercapnia. That's retention of high CO2 in the body. Then over time, it hypoxia joins. So that is about ventilatory pump CPR. Then the ULO, that the ones in charge of gas exchange, upper and lower airway, lung parenchyma, and the O, the others like this CVS, cardiovascular system. So if the U, for example, the airway is affected, airway is needed to move air, yeah, the cilia, to allow air movement rather. Sorry. So if at any point they are blocked, constricted, restricted, whatever word you want to use, either by swelling, by secretion, if at any way the cilia isn't working to move secretion, the MCCs affect them, mucociliary clearance is affected, things like that, and air movements is restricted, there's no gas to exchange with, so oxygen is not taken to the blood, and you have hypoxia. That's one. If the lung and parenchyma, the alveoli is affected, let's say it has lost its elastic property. What else? Okay, sorry, I'll take you back a little bit to the Cipro. Okay, no, that's right over with that. All right, so if the alveoli is affected, the lung parenchyma itself, if it is damaged, in patients with conditions like trying to conditions affecting the alveoli, since alveoli is in charge of the gas exchange, if the alveoli has been damaged by any condition, probably damaged the wall of the alveoli, because any form of damage would, I mean, any form of injury to the alveoli would bring inflammatory mediators. Those ones would affect by proteases. Proteases would damage the walls of the alveoli. Then elastases would destroy elastin. Collagenases would destroy collagen. So all of that process, once the alveoli is affected, the lung parenchyma is affected, boom, gas exchange is affected. Another thing is the CVS, cerebrovascular, cardiovascular system. If blood isn't coming through, then what am I exchanging gas with? The oxygen is to be transported into the blood, yeah, but when the blood isn't coming as it should, then amount of exchange is also reduced. So when these ULO, and also hemoglobin is part of the others, even if the blood is like okay, the amount of air is okay, but the hemoglobin in the blood is low, because the hemoglobin is where the oxygen is going to bind to. If the hemoglobin is low, then that would also affect the respiratory system. So these ULO are the ones that we call the oxygenation system. So we have the ventilation and then oxygenation system. When they are defective, then it leads to hypoxia. But these ones can be defective while the ventilation is still working. Air movement in and out is still working. So your CO2 movement is still good. Its maintenance is perfect. Its elimination is perfect, provided the pumps works fine. So you can have the CNS, PNS, and respiratory muscles and ribcage, okay. But the lung parenchyma, the airway is affected. So you can have hypoxia without necessarily having hypercapnia. So the type 1 acute respiratory failure is the hypoxia one. That is when the ULO is affected. That is when your partial pressure of oxygen is lesser than 55 to 60, but there is no CO2 retention. That shows that, okay, it is purely ULO. So we call that hypoxemic ARF, acute respiratory failure. So if it is hypercapnic and the type 2 ARF, you can already guess what that would be. That would be the CPR being damaged. So retention of carbon dioxide, of course. So P, partial pressure of CO2, would usually be above its normal 35 to 45 mmHg, millimeter mercury. So it should be above 50. But then it could result into hypoxia over time. And that is the mixed type of ARF. So conditions like Guillain-Barré syndrome, spinal cord injury would result into what type? The type 2. Yes, you got, you're right, because what, the PNS would be affected. That would affect the respiratory muscle and the movement of rib cage. Boom, and that would lead to CO2 retention. So what the cardiopulmonary physiotherapist would do would be different from conditions like pneumonia, pulmonary embolism, where the lung parenchyma is the one affected. Now gas exchange is affected. So the amount of support they will need, the amount of oxygen support they will need, the amount of the type of physiotherapy technique might differ, which we still talk about. I mean, oxygen supplement or oxygen therapy, if you can guess it already, won't revert hypercapnia. So you should by now know or guess that patients on oxygen therapy are most likely on type 1 respiratory failure rather than type 2, because oxygen therapy won't take out the CO2 in the lungs. So what would we do? We'd need something that would maintain a minute ventilation, something that would keep the chest movement going. If the patient can't do it themselves, then that is where the mechanical ventilator would come to play. That means mechanical ventilator doesn't necessarily play the role of oxygen therapy. So don't worry, we're still going to come into it. It depends on the type of ventilator, it depends on the setting. Most ventilators also act as oxygen therapy or oxygen supplement. So when you, during the setting, you can choose the fraction of inspired oxygen bringing to the lungs. So FiO2 can be set on mechanical ventilator to introduce oxygen, while the movement of the chest and the elastic recoil, artificial one that the mechanical ventilator is doing, would remove the CO2 by itself. You can set the tidal volume, you can set the minute ventilation yourself. So now you understand the difference between hypoxia, hypercapnia, different respiratory components, the importance of oxygen therapy, and mechanical ventilator. But what happens if the patient to some extent can use some of these components, and you don't want to put the patient, sedate the patient and take them through mechanical ventilator because it has its own complications. So you want to put the patient on a non-invasive oxygen therapy. Why? Because the patient to some extent can use some of the components. So you just want to assist them, especially those with hypoxia. It's just a little hypoxia. Their saturation, oxygen saturation, isn't enough for them to take normal spontaneous ventilation. So you want to introduce non-invasive ventilatory support, NIV. So there are different types of supports. You can either use the NASA cannula that introduces about 24 to 30% oxygen, about 1 to 4 liters per minute. I think it's usually used in non-acute situation, or just slight hypoxia. The patient just have slight hypoxia, like SpO2, like 70, just a little hypoxia. But when you want to take things more serious, you can use the Venturi mask. it introduces about 24 to 60% oxygen. 24 to 60% oxygen. So depending on the color, so the ventral mass are different color of I've forgotten the name of the part. So it's just like the part of the mask itself. There are different colors. There's blue, white, yellow, red, green. So blue delivers the least percentage of oxygen, while green delivers the highest. So you have, so the color you see would suggest how much hypoxic the patient is. So blue, white, yellow, red, green. So you can tell that red would need more support than white. So BYRG. I never give that the name on it. I think I should. The next one is the non-rebreather mask. Non-rebreather mask. That's usually used in acutely unwell patients. Delivers about 85 to 90% oxygen. 15 liter flow rate. That's mad. But that means that for you to be using a non-rebreather mask to some extent, the patient can still use some of these components. Because if they can't use it, then to be good to just place them on mechanical ventilator. But to keep the pressure in the lung working, to keep the alveoli opening and closing, you can add pressure support through the CPAP, continuous positive airway pressure, or the BiPAP. That's, by the way, we'll still talk about all of those. So by now you should understand that you can either breathe yourself, self-ventilate, be assisted with breathing, either partially or fully. Partially is the NIV, non-invasive ventilation, while the fully is the mechanical ventilator. That one delivers 100%, up to 100% oxygen. And lastly, the amount of oxygen to be delivered depends on the CaO2, the arterial content of your oxygen. And that CaO2 is determined by the pressure, partial pressure of your oxygen, and the saturation of oxygen. And the saturation of oxygen is determined by the fraction of the inspired oxygen that you have. So at the end of the day, the setting is usually, I think I'm going deeper into the physiology, so let me just stop here. I think you have enough to understand the component, the respiratory system generally, and what else? Okay, so when we are clicking, it's usually good to note which of these components is affected by which of the by using the symptoms the patient is presenting with. Wheeze, for example, auditory wheeze would result into some hypoxia. Why? Because ULO is affected. That's the U, the tract. So wheeze means that some part of the airway has been reduced, the caliber has been reduced, but the hypoxia might not be significant yet if the wheeze is just a little. But then you can have an idea what has happened to the patient. So that's just how to make sense of all these things. Hey, I'm sure you've learned one thing or the other. Don't go yet though. Check the list of our recorded podcast and find one more to listen to. My name is Abbas Ademola.